All right. Thank you. So just ethically, if everybody knows we're being recorded, if you ask a question or make a comment, you don't want to state your name, that's fine. This is just for the people who couldn't make the call, want to listen to it again, and it goes into our archives. And I'm very happy to introduce our guest today, Patricia Cates with the Center for Credentialing and Education. And Patricia, what is your title? What's your position with CCE?
Well, I am the vice president for CCE. It's a relatively new post to me. I'm actually returning to CCE after a number of years. I was part of the group that started the company back in 1995. I left to raise a family, and I was given the opportunity to come back to the company after teaching for a number of years and working in business programs and teaching, and working as by training, I'm a licensed CPA, and I have a master's in accounting, but love nonprofits, love CCE, and I love the work that it does through credentialing and through coaching and career counseling and the work that we do there. So I had the opportunity to come back and jumped on it. So
good.
Glad to be back.
We're thrilled to have you back. You and I have had many conversations just in the short few months and looking forward to what's coming in the year and many years to come. So the purpose of this call is to let people know about the Board Certified Coach credential and its origins and where it stands today, changes that may be coming, or evolutions, we should say. There's been a lot of growth in this whole thing. And let me just give a historical context for people who don't know. The Center for Credentialing and Education in North Carolina, Greensboro, North Carolina, is kind of a sister organization to National Board of Certified Counselors, or is it the other way around?
Actually, we came out of NBCC. That's
right.
Actually a pretty good statement. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I know Sean O'Brien has already told me, always told me, it's kind of like a sister organization. So National Board of Certified Counselors, which has been around for a long time, certifies 50 or 55,000 registered counselors in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2005, this goes back as far as 2005, I actually had contact with Sean O'Brien and Scott Hinkle, who and also your CEO, your president, Tom.
Yes.
In 2005, I think it was, we were at the Atlanta, Georgia ICF conference, and they had asked if I could meet them for dinner because they wanted to talk about the ICF credentialing process. And part of that conversation was, the ICF is now 10 years old, so in 2005, I was one of the founding members of the ICF back in Houston, Texas in 1995, the beginning of that whole thing. And the long story short was, as a psychologist who moved into coaching, I felt that even though the ICF had done a great job in creating its organization, the ICF, it was beginning to be global, we had ethical standards, we had competencies that we created that still stand up today, but I felt that as a volunteer organization, which it mostly was at the time, it was time for us to consider the credentialing process to be done by an independent organization outside of the ICF. I felt it was a little, if you pardon the expression, incestuous for the ICF to be the membership body and also be the credentialing body. It's not unheard of in other professions, but I just think it would have been cleaner, and I had it in my heart that the coaching profession would reach global acceptance and great standards worldwide, and I felt that a private credentialing organization could do that best. So we had those conversations. I proposed that to the current president of the ICF at the time. I won't state her name now, but it wasn't met with high regard or interest, as you can imagine. It was like, what are you talking about? But then in 2009, Scott Hinkle and Sean O'Brien with CCE asked me again, because basically at that time they said, here's the problem. We have noticed that a lot of our counselors who we register through NBCC are calling themselves coaches, and they don't really have any training as coaches. So as a counselor, it's unethical to provide a service that you haven't had approved training by. In other words, you mm-hmm. can't say you're a specialist in post-traumatic stress disorder if you haven't had training in post-traumatic stress disorder. So they were going to develop a credential and ask if I would like to help, and I said, absolutely. So the good news and bad news about that is it got proposed, and I was very gung-ho about the whole process, and the board of directors of the ICF at the time, and this is all public knowledge. I'm not breaking any confidentialities, but it wasn't met with high reception. In fact, there were some people who thought I was a traitor to the process of the ICF. But that is all now over the bridge. The ICF really understands the place that the BCC credential holds in the world, and we kind of see it as an entry point for all coaches for competency. It's like the basic, you know, to prove you're a competent coach, you can get the BCC. And then if you want to go on to get credentials with the International Coach Federation or the European Mentoring and Coaching Council or the Australian Licensing or Regulation Board or whatever it may be, that's good. But our goal, and I will say I'm on the advisory committee for the BCC credential. I'm a consultant to Center for Credentialing and Education for this process. And where we stand now is the BCC has gotten close to 3,000 credentials, I think, in its three-plus years of existence. And the ICF credential has been around since the year 2000. There's only 10,000 credentials.
Well, and Pat, that's a good point. I want to jump in here and kind of talk a little bit about what, you know, we've been doing credentialing a long time.
Right.
And we've been working with not just coaching, but with a lot of professions to try to help them grow credentialing. Credentialing is really about protecting the public and making sure that safe and effective practice happens, whatever that profession happens to be. And we're talking today about coaching. Coaching is a relatively new profession. And what we're seeing is a normal progression in that profession, in that now that I think it's grown and matured to the point where ICF, you know, where we're seeing good partnerships evolve. ICF has grown to the point where they can focus on membership things, they can focus on advocacy, they can focus on training, they can focus on those kinds of things for the professional, and we do a really good job at credentialing. That's what we do. We can make sure that we have that independent job analysis done that's based upon what good practice in coaching looks like, what good ethical practice looks like in coaching. It's independent of any particular training. It's independent of any, it's really focused on what good training looks like for the client. And that the test is built on that. It's an independent job analysis that creates in an unbiased, objective examination process. And that helps us build an objective credentialing process. So that's really what the foundation of the BCC is. We're to the point that we're looking at a global credentialing process. We credential in around the world now and have been doing that for a while. In fact, I just got back from China working with our Chinese partners over there and just looking at the growth of the BCC in China, the growth of the BCC in Taiwan, discussing things with our European partners and opportunities that we may have there. And actually, we're looking at, our BCC coordinator, Gary Fisher, he and I have been doing some research on streamlining processes for our universities and graduate programs here abroad. There are 57 colleges in 8 countries, 17 states in the United States, and 7 in the United States that are the master's level. 5 of those graduate courses are specific to coaching. So that is phenomenal growth in a profession so young. That is huge. And you don't typically see that in a profession this young. And so we're looking at trying to streamline that application process and streamlining the pathway to getting a credential, because that, along with a credential, comes along, once that professional holds that credential, there comes the ethical practice piece and the lifelong learning piece that comes along with continuing education. And so that's how we can partner with ICF. They can handle the advocacy and the training. We can handle the credentialing and making sure that piece is taken care of. So it's really more of a partnership.
Well, that's our hope. There's nothing that the ICF hasn't said they're going to go down that path, but I think that's the way the profession might be going. I mean, the ICF and the IAC and other organizations can continue to have their credentials that they might have after one gets the BCC. It's like, okay, the BCC doesn't require 750 hours of coaching hours like the PCC does. That's a lot for people who are doing this part-time or moving into the profession. That's a big barrier to becoming credentialed with a PCC, professional certified coach. But if you get your board-certified coach and the public knows that you are a board-certified coach, you have the educational qualification, you have the coaching hours, you have somebody who signed off and endorsed you, you take the CEUs. After you start documenting coaching hours, at some point in the future, you may say, I'm ready to get my PCC, or I'm going to go for my MCC. You know, it depends on how much you coach. To me, those are additional feathers in the cap. Kind of like as a psychologist, I could have become a diplomate in psychology if I wanted to. That's past the basic licenses. So the Center for Credentialing and Education certifies both board-certified coaches, and they also accredit the schools giving such training. And I think at the current time, you have more than 80 schools that have been approved, right, to do the curriculum for the BCC?
I think we do. I can't... That and we've had several that have come through recently, so I'm not sure of the number as the complete total number up to date, but there are quite a few of them.
No, I know there was 72 absolutely. Last year, so you may have, you know, growing all the
time. I think it's probably well over 80, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about this. A lot of the questions people sent in and a lot of the questions people have are, if they're a certified coach and they're supposed to get CEUs for their ICF credential or their membership, and let's say they're also a licensed social worker or a licensed counselor, and they have the board-certified coach, is there any way for the classes that they might take in coaching to count for all of those?
Actually, that's a very good question. We're actually getting a lot of We're trying to clarify some material on our website to actually address those. The answer to that is yes. It has to fall in to the competency areas. I would tell folks that it needs to as long as it's focused on wellness and not on treatment, it falls into the competency. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It needs to be wellness and competency. It needs to fall within the competency areas for our credential. Absolutely. In fact, I reviewed one on appeal the other day that actually one of our BCCs was actually being quite proactive, and they wanted to make sure, and they were actually credentialed in counseling, and they said, look, I've taken these for my licensure. I've taken these for my my counseling profession. Can I count some of these hours also for my coaching? And the answer was yes, some of those hours can count towards their coaching. Not all of them will. But some of them would. We also get a lot of questions around ethics. I will tell folks that make sure that it contains training in a code of ethics and in ethical behavior. Make sure that the ethics training that you're getting specifies a training in a code of ethics specifically towards coaching. If you're practicing ethically in the coaching profession, you need to be trained how to behave ethically as a coach.
So
if
somebody was taking an ethics course for the ICF approved school on ethics and the ICF credential, that would also count toward the board certified coach.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even though the ethical guidelines might be a little different, it's the education. In fact, I'm taking a class right now from Tina Elliott, who teaches with ILCT. It's a 4-week class on how to stay out of hot water, ethics, and coaching. And she uses both the BCC code and the ICF codes, which is a great class where people are able to compare and contrast and look at the issues that might come up in coaching a client.
Certainly. Our preference would be the BCC Code of Ethics because that is – it's our credential. That would be certainly our preference, but ICF is certainly acceptable. But it needs to be a code of ethics that is specific to coaching.
Right. So one of the common questions I get, Patricia, and I haven't thought about this in the beginning, one of the requirements for maintaining your board-certified coach credential is that you have to have 100 hours of continuing coaching education units every 5 years. So that's 20 hours a year. The ICF requires, I'm trying to think what they require. I have to turn mine in soon. It's something like maybe 60 in 3 years. I can't remember. But the question comes into play. Some people say that seems like a lot. And I say one of the things that the BCC credential allows that the ICF credential doesn't yet allow is a lot of those hours can be done online or asynchronously. In other words, if somebody's approved to teach a class where you might watch a video, read a content, you can and take an assessment online that can be validated, that can count. So you might say opportunities there are. Yeah.
There are lots of ways that you can get continuing education. And believe me, I know how expensive that can be. And that can be, especially when you're trying to maintain multiple credentials. First of all, I think it will help if professionals understand that you can double count for some of those as long as you look for things that are not treatment based and do address that are more wellness based and coaching based, and do address the competency areas. You can look for we've had folks that, for example, that have taught courses. As long as you're teaching to your peers, you can count some of those hours. Mm-hmm. If you are doing things online, and believe me, I know firsthand how expensive this can be. There are a variety of ways that you can get continuing education courses. And so there's actually some guidelines online that can help you do that. So I think we're even working.
I know you guys have an iCounselor website, and I think we're developing iCoach website, the letter iCoach.
Yes.
So that there may be some online courses that you can take just on that website. And then schools like us, ILCT and others, are developing courses that are specific to continuing education, because you don't want to go back and basic coaching thing. You know, you for somebody to keep their credential, we believe that a certain number of hours every year should be ethics related, and then maybe have some advanced skill or a unique coaching application that you're learning, so that it's the value of adult learning, as Patricia said in the beginning, ongoing learning, continual learning. That's what every good professional is about.
Absolutely. Lifetime learning. And we're actually looking, we're partnering with our foundation and looking for ways to cost effectively bring those to you. So you can look for them in a variety of formats. I know firsthand how terribly expensive that can be. Mm-hmm. So if we can look for ways to bring those to you and make you aware of them, we've got iCounseling. We're about to launch something called iLearn. Again, we don't want to get too far off of our – we have to be very careful. We don't want to get too far away from our focus, which we feel is credentialing. So
Right.
Yeah, we don't do training. Training is not something that we do. But if there's a way that we can find, certainly one of the things that we're finding that a lot of folks need some really clear guidance on is ethics. So we think ethics is very much within our mission. So we're actually toying with the idea of tying that to safe and effective practice. So if we can get some guidance there, especially in a profession that is as emerging as the BCC, that may be something that we're looking at. But That's something we absolutely
Let's talk about this a bit, because I'm not sure who's on the call or who's listening, but let's go over what are the requirements to get the board certified coach. Maybe somebody's new to this and they saw our announcement of the call, they're a student at ILCT and they're taking coaching classes. What's required to get the board certified coach today?
Okay, let's look at basic education. And there's actually within our application materials, there's a really good matrix on page 4. If anybody's interested, we'll be more than happy to provide that to you. But the minimal education required is just a bachelor's degree or higher in any field or concentration. And one of the first things I did when I came on was to look at how broad that is. And we have individuals from 16 different backgrounds. I thought that for sure that would be mostly, since you know, it would be mostly helping professions. But we've got veterinarians that have the BCC.
Wow.
Yeah, I was surprised. So when we say any field or concentration, we really mean that.
Wow.
So it really is all over the block. We do require 30 hours of coaching experience. And training anywhere from, it depends upon where you fall on that spectrum with your education and your training, but that anywhere from 30 to 120 hours of training in coaching from a CCE approved BCC training provider. And what we're looking for with those BCC, and ICF is one of those training providers. And then you have to have an endorsement. So it's a combination of education, experience, training, and then an endorsement. And then the last step in all of that is that you have to pass the exam. So
yeah,
that's what it takes to become a BCC.
Right. So when we develop these standards, let me just speak to this because some of you may have this question. So some people have said, well, that's too easy. Well, not really. I mean, if you already have a graduate degree in some helping profession,
right.
And you can document 30 hours of coaching. Here's the thing. For the ACC with the International Coach Federation, you're supposed to have 100 hours of coaching. But how that's documented, I mean, let's be honest. Some people say, I coached this person for 12 hours. I coached it. And nobody really knows. Nobody really checks up. So it's rather than say it, you get a validation or an endorsement by somebody who knows you. You document your degrees and your training. And you have to pass a written examination that is codified and validated
right.
statistically, and that's how this is different. You're getting a credential that is for competency. So
right.
when you go to take this written exam, you might take it at H&R Block or university setting. You take a monitored exam, just like people who get a real estate license or something else do. And that's
mm-hmm.
pretty good credential for competency. It doesn't say you're great, doesn't say you're masterful, but it does say you're a competent coach who ascribes to ethics, a body of ethics with a recognized organization.
And that's a good point, Pat. This one this credential was designed to ensure the minimum level for safe and effective practice in coaching.
Right.
And this credential was not designed just because we as a company decided, got together, because I'm not a coach. We got coaches from a diverse background and diverse positions on coaching together, and we helped. This is a credential designed by coaches for coaches.
Right.
And that's the way the exam was designed. It was researched. It's statistically built. It is built using good testing methodology by psychometricians and good testing standards. It is legally defendable, and it's the cut score is designed using good standard psychometric practices. So this credential has rigor behind it, and I think that is something that is needed in the profession, especially
yeah.
one that is growing and emerging
yeah.
as this one is.
So
let's
talk about what's coming, because I'm on, as I said in the beginning, I'm on the advisory committee and help with the testing exam and this and that.
Sure.
When most credentials get created in any field, the first time it
mm-hmm.
gets created, you kind of leave the barn doors wide open. It's sure. a lot easier for people to get in the beginning than it will be later. So what might mm-hmm. be changing on the test or the exam features? Any talk at your board or your office about revising the test in the coming year?
Well, that's what we've been through. We just went through, we had the inaugural period and the norming period for the examination, and that is kind of over. What we're doing now is during the inaugural period and the norming period of the exam, we have people come in and they take it, and they take it during a period where you can just take it and we just gather data on it. Where
right.
we're field testing the items and gathering data and making sure the items are functioning well, the exam's functioning, and it's a reliable tool.
Mm-hmm.
That's over. We've proven that the exam is reliable, the items are working, and mm-hmm. it is doing what it's supposed to do statistically. So now it is truly an exam that you have to pass. What typically happens now is we treat it as we do any of our other exams. We make new versions. We get committees together of subject matter experts. They review the items. They review the exam as a whole. It's reviewed at least once or twice a year by our staff psychometricians, and we make new versions of it. We send that out to our testing company, AMP. They administer it to new candidates as they come on, and it is constantly evolving. It's constantly developing, and we expect to have that testing committee meet later on this year to write new items, look at the data, look at how the exam's performing. That group of subject matter experts is a committee of 5 to 10 people, and that will be continually growing and continuing to add people to it. And so that's where we go from here. What
Great.
We're also, as one of the things that we're looking to do is streamlining the application process to make it easier for people to apply, but also maintaining that level of rigor within the credential.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're looking at doing is partnering certainly with our graduate programs. One of the reasons that I was able to kick out so quickly that information about what's happening with the colleges and universities is that's going to be a focus
mm-hmm.
in the upcoming years, partnering with them to make it easier for their graduates to get that credential and go forth from there.
Wonderful.
I think that's a pretty good step to take. It's amazing to see that growth in those graduate programs. So that's nice to see.
Great.
We're also growing it heavily in China and in other countries abroad. So we have a global credential, and it truly is a global credential.
Mm.
So,
well, listen, we really seem to have a really clean line. So let's just see if anybody on the call has a question they'd like to ask. We're not getting a lot of interference. So if anybody has a question or a comment you'd like to ask specifically today, go ahead and do that.
Hi, this is Lisa. I'm calling from Philly. And my question is going a little bit deeper into the specialty designations. And I was looking also at the liability insurance that's going to be a very nice perk for the BCC, people who have the BCC. So you have in there personal coach and life coach, and I'm wondering if there's a distinction between those two descriptions.
Okay, the personal life coach is the same distinction, and that is one of our specialty designations. You have to do 30 hours of your continuing education. It's 100 hours that you have to do. If your continuing education has to be within that specialty designation, you have to have a professional endorsement that is particular to that area, and you have to pay an additional $25 to obtain that specialty designation. So that is the personal life, if I'm understanding your question correctly, that is one specialty designation. They're not separate. Personal life is one.
There you go.
Okay, I was just wondering why that would need to be distinct from just coach, because I understand career, health and wellness, and executive. I guess I was just making the assumption that most coaches are, coming in as a life coach.
Yes. Well, and I will tell you, we normally respond to, we do a feasibility study when we get requests for specialty designations from the profession. And we actually have two more requests that we're actually looking at right now, one from the gerontological area and one from the ADHD area. We're trying to see if there's enough demand. First of all, if individuals within the profession can obtain those 30 hours easily and cost-effectively and in a quality way, and if there's enough demand in the marketplace from the clients and consumers of coaching to have a need for that specialty designation.
Well, I can tell you already, as an ADHD coach and a member of the ADHD Coaches Organization, there's a lot of excitement around CCE Global taking this on as a specialty, and I myself am very interested in that.
Well, that's great to hear.
Lisa, this is Pat. Let me respond to your other, because I think, you know my philosophy at ILCT. It's like all coaching is life coaching. No matter what you call yourself, it's what we do. But I think there was enough interest in people who just wanted their title to be, or they could say that, especially in personal life coaching or maybe health and wellness coaching. So for every specialty that somebody wants to get, they have to document a certain number of hours of training. But it's kind of like board-certified positions. You know, you can be board-certified in one thing and then go on to specialization. That's the goal. And I think the individual coach has to decide, what designation do I want? Because I don't want to do just executive coaching. And I'm not just a wellness coach, which is growing magnanimously. but I think the idea of specialization is it's fairly easy. You know, you have to document an additional 30 hours of coach training in that specific area. I know that CCE is going to be looking at, wellness coaching is kind of life coaching with a different title sometimes. I mean, working with a person's life. So I think the idea is to have specializations that are recognized in the field. And there are, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been talking about health and wellness coaching. But in today's world, especially globally, but now so in the United States, health coaching is starting to pop up more and more as a field that's recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
So this is always evolving. And I'm glad to see them looking at the ADD specialty coaching, because you don't want anybody calling themselves an ADD coach just because they think it's a hot topic. You know, you want specific training, specific knowledge that goes into coaching clients with ADHD, and that's the reason for that specialization.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for doing that. I think it's great. Yeah. Do you have a timeline approximately when that might be launched?
We actually worked with the IAAC and we're actually offering a special deal to their group right now to come on and be BCC. So if you're interested, please contact me outside of this, and I'll make sure to get you some information. Expect an e-blast in the next week about that special offer.
Okay.
For that group. Because we're offering actually some reduced pricing on that. So we're probably going to be looking at that in the next year to see if there's see where we can look at the training and see where we can see about bringing that on through the feasibility study. So that's something we've got on our table for next year. We've got Gary researching that now. So
thank you for answering my questions. I'm going to go back on mute, but this is great.
Great. Thank you, Lisa.
Great.
Anybody else have a comment or a question in the time remaining? Well, let me just make a comment, because I'm sitting here looking on the wall in my office of this wonderful picture from the training I did in Beijing probably 5 years ago now, maybe 4 years ago. And it was just a phenomenal group of 30-some men and women in Beijing that we did a six-day training with an interpreter, and it was the launch of the BCC in China. And I just, to me, that's the essence of global. I mean, there is my picture standing with these students outside of the training center where we did this. And I just think it's exciting that coaching has become so global. And then you have a global organization such as CCE, which has other credentials. I mean, in addition to national certified counselor and board certified coach, can you talk a little bit Patricia, about the other credentials that CCE is leading the way with?
Absolutely, absolutely. Certainly one of our largest is the GCDF credential, our Global Career Development Facilitation credential. That's probably our most global credential that we have. We have, that one is actually in 14 different countries, and it partners well with the BCC.
Yes.
But we also have the Approved Clinical Supervisor credential and the Distance Credentialed Facilitator and the Distance Credentialed Counselor. Those are for counselors who, and they specialize in counseling and helping folks counsel through the web, especially for folks that don't have access to counseling in a traditional setting. We also have a credential in human services for folks that work in human services but maybe not in counseling. We also have a credential in called Thinking for a Change. That those folks work with in corrections, in the corrections area. And one of our most growing, that's the kind of the corrections or the credentialing side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of credentialing we do, but we also manage credentials for other areas. We manage credentials for smoking cessation groups. We manage the operations of the art therapy groups. And we've also done some work for the residential interior designers. So we are a diverse
yeah,
crowd.
Yeah, see, I love that. I wanted the audience to hear this because this is why I love the Center for Credentialing and Education. That's what they do. They do credentialing, psychometrics, and the whole ramifications that go into creating a credential for a profession. So they have interior designers, community correction officers, counselors, supervisors, et cetera, and anybody can come to them and create a certification. So they are in the business of certification, and that's why I got so excited about the board certified coach. You all should be proud to have that or move toward that. And what else are you going to
do? I was just working last week with some groups that were working with wheelchair fitters. So, it's a diverse...
Wow.
It's a diverse company, and I love what we do every day.
Everything is about protecting the public so that when you put your money out to somebody who says they can do what they do, if they have a credential from a regulated organization. I mean, talk a little bit about, before we're done here, and how is CCE monitored? How does CCE get their approval in the credentialing process? Who's watching?
That's
the store,
a good question.
Yeah.
Yes. ICE. And I forget that it's the Institute for Credentialing Excellence.
They used to be called something else, and then they
And I forget what they used to be called.
Yeah, me too. something with an N. National Testing.
NOCA, I believe. NOCA.
NOCA.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at me.
The National.
That came out of the cobwebs.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, the Institute for Credentialing Excellence is actually a professional membership organization that provides, it promotes best practices for the credentialing community. And we're a longstanding member of them. We trained with them. We were credentialed through them. We are accredited through them. They do NCCA accreditation. We have helped other organizations get NCCA accreditation. We've helped, if a group comes and says, hey, look, we don't really want you to manage us, but we're really trying to get NCCA accreditation, we can help you get through that process. So we've done that with other organizations. We've helped the organizations that we manage get through that process, which can be long. But it's important. They come in and... they audit your credentialing. They audit your exam processes. They make, you talked a little bit about the ICF and the appearance of bias, because I don't want to ever accuse anybody else of bias, because it's not uncommon for credentials to grow out of membership organizations just out of necessity, but they look for not only the existence of bias, but the appearance of bias. And they make sure that there is proper walls in place to make sure that that doesn't happen. They make sure that the exam is independent. They make sure that the job analysis is done properly. They make sure the review processes are done as they should be. And so our partnership with ICE is important. Our training that we do for them, we've spoken at their conferences. And so that's a big part of what we do. It's a big part of what we know. And we learn from them, and you know, we hopefully are able to grow, you know, learn something new every time I work with them. I'm an auditor by training, but it's instead of auditing numbers this time, I'm auditing processes. So it's good to have someone do that with you. And as with our credentials, our own credentialing process is just about continual growth and continual learning, which I think is pretty neat, because I think it fits the coaching model.
Yes, very, very well said. So I think what I wanted everybody to hear is that the Center for Credentialing and Education has a valid, very valid and well-respected global reputation. When they took on creating the Board Certified Coach in 2009, 2010, et cetera, we could be proud of that. And moving forward, you're all going to be proud to be a BCC or moving toward that, because it is the, you know, if you have a periscope to look around the corner, this is the credential. I mean, I have nothing against the ICF. I continue to be a member. I helped start the ICF. I've been on the board of the ICF. I was the chair of the regulatory committee and the ethics committee. And, I mean, I love what the ICF has done for coaching globally. But I think basic competency done by a private organization who's in the business of that is the way to go. And it's going to make the public will be able to make sense out of it in the future. So, you know, I thank you all for being on this call. Patricia, I thank you for being here to share what's new with the Center for Credentialing and Education, the Board Certified Coach. And one last question is everybody that is approved for a BCC, are they in some sort of database where they receive communication about what's up? And, you know, maybe someday in the future we'll have a conference of BCCs or something like that?
Absolutely. We have a large database of BCCs that will we have a newsletter that goes out. In fact, it's getting ready to go out in the next couple of weeks. And we have e-blasts that we're going to send out and find a way to constantly communicate with folks. There's a registry online of BCCs. So, yes, absolutely, there is.
Good.
There's a huge database.
Great.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
thank you for being here. I know I'm going to see you next month in Greensboro when I come up to do a ethics talk to a coaching group. So I'm going to be pleased.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here, and thank you all for coming. And if you have any other questions, you can write to me about the BCC, and I'll forward it or discuss it with Patricia to just pat@lifecoachtraining.com. And we're glad you're all participating in this. And those of you who are listening online or in the recorded, thank you for paying attention. And we'll see you next month. I think next month our talk is with a woman named Leticia, who is a former prisoner who used our ILCT coaching actually through my book, Becoming a Professional Life Coach. And I know she's familiar with the Thinking for a Change program, Patricia. But she also
She
went through a coaching program, and after 20 years in prison is now working for the mayor's office in Washington, D.C. She's the head of the Returning Citizens Group. So for prisoners coming back to Washington, D.C., and how to get them jobs and coaching so that they don't go back to prison. So we're going to have
that sounds like an amazing, amazing call. I can't wait.
Good. All right. Well, thank you all. Thank you for being here. Talk to you next time. Bye.
All right. Thanks, guys.